myself enough.
Oh, believe me, everybody else is hearing you way too much.
Oh, I see. Are we? Is that how it's going to be? Okay. Well, in that case, hold on. Let's see if this comes through. Ah. Mm. So that sound, ladies and gentlemen, and our two moms who we know listen, is the sound of a beer because we're recording in the evening for a change.
We are. Yes. How is your hams? You know, from the land of clear blue water, hams beer.
Oh no! This is a Broadbrook Porter's Porter.
Oh, nice.
And Broadbrook was one of the breweries that took advantage of our skyrocket hops.
Oh,
from
yes.
North Valley. They made a promiscuous ale.
Oh, that was so good.
It was wonderful. And the logo for the promiscuous was one of my favorite logos of all time. It was some very,
suggestive?
Suggestively placed two sets of feet intertwined in a way to make you imagine what was going on with what was connected to those feet.
And someday we might on the podcast talk about how we came up with the Skyrocket brand name. But we don't want to ruin that for everybody for right now. So we'll talk about that later. Anyway, so what are we going to talk about today?
Well, it's finally time to talk about the contest, quote unquote, that we were running for what felt like forever there, to get folks to tell us about their plans, either their existing or their future hop yards, so that we could give them advice and or tell them everything that they're doing wrong or tell them to just go back to their day jobs.
Time to talk them out of it.
Kind of like we do at a general level every week, but now we've got some specific people and we know where they live.
No. Yes, we have map coordinates.
So we can just come to your house and say, please don't do this. Please don't do this.
Right.
Housekeeping. We must do our housekeeping.
Housekeeping.
As you hopefully saw on, and of course we're probably publishing this a few weeks after it happened, but 500 followers and counting on Instagram. If you are not following us on Instagram, you are missing all of my poetry.
You know what's even the most awesome part about that? Is I don't have to do anything about it.
Yeah, that's all me.
When we started this, I said, you know what? I'm done with social media. I was burned out from the Gorse Valley stuff. I didn't want anything to do with it, so it's all you. So kudos to you, Greg.
So let me ask you this, though. Are you done with social media, or is social media done with you?
We're still trying to come to terms with that. So we'll just, right now, I'm not at liberty to say.
Okay.
It's a court order and everything. But anyway, 500 followers on Instagram. That's awesome.
I think we're already at 510 at this point. But
5. Yeah, 10.
I'll take everyone I can get.
Mm-hmm. You know? Because it equals so much revenue.
Well, somehow. And let's be honest, the first 50 were me under different Gmail addresses.
So does that mean you're internet famous now?
We are internet famous.
Internet famous. Awesome.
I keep threatening. I'm going to start showing, pictures of myself holding beers in a thong because those are the ones that get the likes. I'm telling you.
Yeah, but what does it equal? It doesn't equal anything but a bunch of creepers, and we don't want that. Our listeners and followers are of much higher integrity than that.
Don't you know about the endorphin hit you get from every like that pops up?
And it's going to your head. But anyway, let's go back
on track. Great with the Instagram. Keep following us. Tell all your friends. And Patreon, thank you to Hills Hops, who's joined on as well. I've just taken several pictures of my Porter's Porter and my nice Hopnology mug that will go on to our Patreon chat section there. And as usual, I always post a couple of tidbits about what we talk about behind the scenes here. And we thank you for sponsoring us on Patreon and defraying the costs of hosting and microphones and all of this gear that's taking up space in my basement.
Right. And the monkey room.
Yes. Yes, there is the monkey. We still have not posted a picture of the monkey room.
I thought we did when Dan was on. Didn't we post a picture of the monkey room? Maybe that was
Instagram. That was on Instagram.
I'll take a picture for you tonight live from the monkey room. You can put it on the Patreon.
Include your beer in that. What are you drinking since we've talked about mine?
I am drinking a brand new Kolsch from none other than New Glarus Brewing Company. And they will not send a beer out into the world unless it is perfection. And Dan Carey, friend, fantastic job. It's called Kid Kolsch, as in a child goat. It is absolutely everything that I would expect from New Glarus. And as a Kolsch lover, kudos.
Very nice. Very nice. And it's, we were talking about this earlier, it's tough to make a good Kolsch. It's not something a lot of people do. So when you get one, it's nice to get a good one.
Yeah, and I love it, so that means it'll probably go away soon.
Well, that's because, you know, you've got odd traditional tastes if you don't like things that are smoothies.
That's true, yeah. No glitter in this beer.
Oh, God, my Instagram feed is still annoying me with some of these things that I see. But I was at, so I was at a charity event last week, and there were a whole bunch of brewers there, and it was so nice that one or two of them didn't bring a single IPA. It was, there was...
What?
It was great. It was, I had a porter and a stout, and someone had a smash pale ale that was quite tasty. There was a Kolsch.
Oh, so for all of our listeners that are sort of out in the Nebraska, Kansas, Colorado area, I'll be out there in January, end of January, at the Nebraska Brewer and Grower Conference. And I've got three speaking slots, yeah, in my... I'm so excited about this. My brewing chemistry speaking slot is called Hazy is Lazy.
Oh, I love it.
That's going to be awesome.
We will definitely continue to talk about your speaking engagements and get some stuff out on Instagram about that so people know, in case anyone's in that area and wants to come see James, please, anyone who heckles James and sends me some sort of video of it, it's going right up on the website.
You bet.
I won't be able to be there, so I want proof, and it can I we got to do this.
Yep, buy me beers. You can heckle me all you want.
Mm-hmm. Outstanding. So anyone in the Nebraska area, both of you,
right?
Let me know if you can heckle James. Fantastic. So we had a bunch of submissions for, you know, people saying, "Hey, I'm doing this, I'm doing that," and we've got three we're going to talk about here. And we've divided them into two categories. We've got one where we've got a couple who is looking to seriously do this. They haven't done it yet, but they have a plan in place, and we'll talk about their plan. And then we've got two others who clearly are in the hobbyist category. And we're going to talk about them in the third person because they've asked us to keep them private, which is totally understandable. But they're both in the Midwest area. In both cases, you know, the why question, we've talked about the why question a lot. Well, why are you going to do this? And one of them, the answer to why, and I love this answer, was why not?
Yep.
And the other, he's a grower with a background in composting and environmental stuff like that. And he just likes to play with plants.
Mm-hmm.
So neither one of these two is looking to break the bank, to get famous. They're just having fun with hops. And I love that. I think that's great.
I think that's great too. I mean, you and I, by marriage, have a grandfather-in-law that we share that was a high school football coach and an orchid breeder.
Yep.
Because orchids are cool as hell. He was a hobbyist and he absolutely crushed it, but he kept it there because he just enjoyed it. So I think the concept of saying, you know what, I'm a hobbyist, but I'm like all into it, because obviously they're listening to our podcast, so they must be all into it. Great. And I love the fact that people know their happy place, know where they feel like they fit in this whole scheme of this continuum of potential.
Yep. And, you know, we've said it before, that if you love to farm, turning anything you love into your career, whether it's farming or artwork or music, turning your passion into your career can very easily blow out that passion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it's nice to see these folks keeping this as something that they do because they enjoy it, and not be, the moment you get out of bed and say, oh, I have to go do this, and it used to be something you love to go do, that's unfortunate. It really is.
Even if you love it, and I've heard people say, you know, if you want to be a successful entrepreneur and small business owner, you got to love every aspect of it. That's total bullshit.
No.
There are things that you have to do, right, to keep things going, and there's things about the overall operation you love to do that's really not a chore. So this concept of, you know, you got to love every single minute of it if you're going to be successful is garbage. So let's just throw that right out the window. One of the single biggest wins for people is knowing solidly in their mind and in their heart that I want to be a hobbyist, or I want to be small commercial, and being okay with that. Mm-hmm. And not trying to, or, you know, have that little nagging thing in your head where it's like, no, I have to be a big commercial thing or I'm not going to be validated. You know what? Just drop it. Let it go. Be honest with yourselves, because we're not here to judge you. I mean,
I thought that's exactly what we were here for.
Well, you're here to judge me.
Well, yeah.
Because at least that's what I've come to understand. Anyway, No, but if that's your passion, then own it and keep it there. So there's nothing wrong with a hobbyist scale. And certainly being a hobbyist and listening to this podcast, because we're talking tech. We're going to talk industry and market and all that kind of stuff and business, but keep it where it's comfortable for you. And don't try and turn it into something it's not.
Mm-hmm. It can ruin your passion if that's
totally
what you're doing it for. So one of these hobbyists, I want to just sort of paraphrase his notes here, because I think this is so interesting and it may be something that some of you have gone through. We planted in 2014 after a wet spring. We planted Yakima Gold because that was one of the fancy hops at the time. We did about 200 plants. I thought I was all ready for this adventure. And when I read that line at first, I said, okay, this story's going to take a turn. At this time, I was dragging a hose around to water them. Half the plants survived to come back in 2015. At that point, we built the trellis around the plants. This was great. Ooh. I had a guy tell me I could plant, then build the trellis. Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, that guy was wrong. Yep.
He was wrong. So here's someone who's learning quickly. You know, he's learning season after season. We had some plants that did well, some that didn't. Then we installed our drip irrigation. I was excited, and I injected nitrogen and quickly learned I was too late in the season for that. So that was not a great year. Then they battled downy mildew twice. They had a hand harvest. In 2017, we had it all figured out. Ha ha. We then fought off some more downy mildew. Then they went away from the Yakima Gold, and they planted, am I pronouncing this right, Mackinac. And so they have learned and pivoted and tried different things. This was great. I'm pretty sure I know what I did wrong now by listening to your podcasts. Oh, man, that puts a lot of pressure on me. I don't know.
I've screwed it all up, so I can commiserate. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh yeah, okay.
So he talks some more about the fact that he's got friends and his parents and his brother and his wife who've all been there to help. One of the best parts of this hopyard adventure has been how our group has grown closer. We've had our friends' boys playing in the hopyard, and my young son is joining in and going on tractor rides, and we hope we keep seeing our families enjoy this hopyard. And that's a fantastic story. I love it. He's got two lines here in particular. Throughout this whole adventure, I thought by 5 years in, I'd have more figured out. And then we're always learning, but I know it's key to fail forward. And we talk all the time about it's not failure, it's learning. So here's someone who's made it a family and friends affair. They're having a good time. They're zigging and zagging as they need to. Everything that goes wrong, they learn from it and they pivot. And he's not stressed. He's not dealing with the bank. He's just enjoying his hop yard. So I think that's a great story.
It is, absolutely. And embrace that. If that's what you love about it, let that be what you get out of it. Mm-hmm. And don't try and make it something that it's not.
Yep.
But if they were to come to us and say, well, Greg wasn't part of this, what do you see in the future? Right. So where do they see themselves in the future, and what do they want out of it? And that would be my question of, if you're getting out of it so much that you love, why do you think it needs to evolve? Mm-hmm. So what do they say about where they want to be?
He says maybe building some products out of the hops as opposed to to pellet hops. You know, we spoke to Mark about soaps and candles, but he ends it with hobby for the most part is where he sees it going.
Awesome. And that's, I think, very important. Mm-hmm. if you're reaping so much from the experience, let that be enough.
Yep.
Right? If you want to run it as a business, which we'll talk about a little bit here later, great. But understand that's what your goal is.
Yep. Yeah. I'm thrilled for him and for what he's done with this. I think it's great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So let's see here. Our next one, also a hobbyist, but a little bit of a different spin here. Someone who he's calling it a research/experimental hop yard. And even the way he talks about some of this stuff, growing since 2010 with 5 cultivars. You don't hear the word cultivar very often unless it's a scientist talking about their varieties.
That's right.
Having some success. And the why. So we go back to the why. Why? Hops are amazing plants. Grow just one and you'll know. Engaging, mm-hmm. labor-intensive, learning, friends, in some cases profit, parentheses, not mine.
That's true.
So again, he's doing this for the love of the game, of the growing, mm-hmm. The plan, experimenting, learning from my successes and failures, learn from what others are doing. So really just looking to enjoy what he's doing with that.
Right.
Oh, he sent us some pictures that we're not going to share, just to give us an idea. And he's got hops growing up the side of the house. Very mm-hmm. clearly hobby type stuff.
Right.
He's enjoying it. And thank you. You know who you are because you're listening to this. Thank you for sharing all that with us. And thank you for your kind words about the podcast. We're glad you're getting something out of it. And we love these stories. So for all of you listening who are thinking that everyone is going to do this to make their fortune and turn this into a business, this can just be fun.
It can be. And I will give you a great example if anybody is in the industry and is active in it. There's a gentleman out of Ohio. His name's Bob Biro, Bee Hoppy Candy. And Bob is a very, very small scale hop grower slash breeder slash hobbyist, but very intense about his learning of the plant and everything about the plant, the aspects that can be influenced, how breeding works, and just very passionate about it. And Bob has had several years. He's been going as long as we've been in the industry, and I've had the great fortune of meeting Bob a few times and getting drunk with him at conferences. But the things that he's uncovered about how the plant grows and observations that have been made, some other people have never even commented on. So even in this industry, with a plant that's been cultivated since, as we know it, since 1252 AD, a small-scale individual who's working a full-time day job but is still passionate about it at the hobby scale can make significant contributions to our understanding.
Yeah, I mean, every day we're learning more and more about these things. And mm-hmm. it's so nice to see people that are into it for the research side. Way back when we did our Fantasy Hop Yard episode, that was one of the things we talked about, was having a dedicated research area. Just making sure that there was part of what we were doing that was giving back scientifically to hop production and gathering information, you know, because, look, it's all about the search for the best beer possible. So let's get the best ingredients possible.
And I think too, you know, when you and I started this podcast, you know, one of the things we wanted to do was sort of translate the science into a language that everybody could understand and make it immediately impactful in their hop yard. And so I continue to encourage people of all scales, you know, hop growing scales, to experiment. And to reach out and ask questions of the science, or if they see something that they don't understand in a publication, to ask, because we can help translate that for you. Mm-hmm. Whether it's market-based research, you know, for business plan stuff, or whether it's actual science, plant physiology type stuff, let us help you figure out what it means for you. Because small-scale growers and hobbyists can still be impactful in this industry.
And, you know, slight detour there. You raised something that has sparked a memory in my mind. When we did first start working on the podcast, which feels like forever ago now, we mm-hmm. came up with a huge list of topics, all these things we wanted to talk about. And one of the things, if you recall, we talked about was taking technical papers and boiling them down to what they mean in practice. Because most right. folks, even, you know, hardcore farmers, are not going to read these scientific university studies that are just right. they're impossible to wade through. And I would ask our listeners here, give us some feedback on Instagram or wherever else. You know, do you want to hear some of that real hardcore scientific content for us to take those and boil them down a bit? There's a lot of research going on. There was something that, James, you just forwarded to me about mm-hmm. hydroponics.
Right.
So there's all this stuff out there, and we haven't gone down that path yet, but I'd love to know if our listeners would like to hear us dissect some of these intense scientific papers for them.
Yeah, we have to hear from you guys and girls out there. Otherwise, you know, we're going to do our own thing. And I've been reading scientific journals and translating them into human speak for almost 30 years. So I'm happy to do that for the gang and the family listening to our podcast. But we have to hear from you guys to know whether or not that's something that you want.
And I promise, I will make this commitment right now. If we do any of those, which involve James making up a lot of words, we will record mm-hmm. those in the evening so that I can have a beer or two during them, because I need something to do while he's talking about these scientific papers.
Right.
And I will heckle him accordingly. So I will insert the humor to keep those episodes from being complete snoozers. We don't want you falling asleep at the wheel listening to this.
Some of them may involve bringing on Dan.
Oh, Lord.
Which everybody seems to like, bring on Dan. And then mm-hmm. another clown of ours you haven't heard from, which is Joe.
Oh, yeah.
Our chemist, mm-hmm. yeah. So you think I make up words? I'm the one who usually has to be in the room with Joe to translate into English whatever is coming out of his mouth, because I don't think the man knows words less than three syllables.
I envision the old drug ad with you looking at Joe saying, "I learned it from watching you."
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were going to say I was the disclaimer that says, you know, if you do not taunt Happy Fun Mall.
Oh, there's that as well. Well, if we're going down that path, as long as it's not the love toilet, I think we're fine.
It's yeah. not the love okay, toilet.
Good.
Okay.
Good. We are completely off track.
Yeah. Do you hear that train wreck? Mm-hmm. Everybody heard that train uh-huh. wreck. Okay.
So I encourage everyone to go, when they're done here, get on YouTube and Google Happy Fun Ball, by the way, if you don't know what we're yeah. talking about.
Oh, and the love toilet.
And the love toilet.
Because you can't not.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So let's talk professionals or aspiring professionals in terms of hop growing.
I was going to say, we're going to talk professionals? Really? We totally, everybody, we just lost, completely tanked our credibility.
Oh, boy.
Weren't we just talking about the love toilet and then you just segued into professionals like that?
Maybe we should go back to coffee instead of beer. I don't know.
Maybe we should, yeah.
So another one of our listeners here who are located in Wisconsin, and they're in the planning mm-hmm. stages. So they've got a brand new farm. They've got 55 acres. They're planning on going with a 3-acre hop farm as a starting point. And they're doing this very slow and steady. They are just doing tilling and nutrient management for the next 2 years and not even planting or trellising until 2020. So that's a nice forward plan. We get a lot of emails and whatnot from folks saying, well, I'm going to get my trellis in as soon as the ground thaws, and I'm going to put 4 acres of plants in. You know where I can get those plants? It's like, okay, let's slow down. So these folks seem to have a long-term plan in place, which is good to see. They're also talking about flowers, orchard, nut trees. They already have some grapes going. So there's a lot of moving pieces going on here. And they're also talking about growing, processing, and packaging, and potentially even a farm brewing. So there are a lot of ideas spinning around here. They know that they've got, you know, if they're not planting for 3 years, they're a good 5+ years from the first real crop. So this is, again, very, very much in the future. But the one thing that jumped out at James and I both was continuing to work their full-time jobs until this becomes something that's paying at least one of their salaries. And we found very, I mean, with all of the different things, all the different ideas on this farm, that's just not feasible. Let's just throw that out
yeah.
there.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. This is a full-time operation when you're talking about 3 acres that are not just hops, because orchard management, flowers, totally different ballgame.
So speaking from experience here, that both as a hop grower and an orchardist. When we expanded past our trial phase year, what seems like a lifetime ago, you know, going from a quarter acre to an acre, non-mechanized, right? Because there was, way back then, there was absolutely nothing available for mechanized weed control or anything. It was all hand labor. At an acre, we had to hire a part-time person 3 days a week to come in to maintain the hop yard, on top of my and our other two business partners' night, evenings, and weekend work for an acre. Mm-hmm. Now, you're going to go to 3 acres. So let's look at 3 acres. All right. There is some mechanization available, but you're going to spend money, more money up front than somebody who's not as interested in putting in that kind of time. But it's got to happen, because your orchard's also going to require that attention, and cut flowers are going to require that attention. So I would be very, very cautious in thinking that you can do all three of those things in nights and weekends, because on 3 acres, you cannot manage that alone with two people nights and weekends. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen. Yep. You will fail.
Yeah, it's a lot to do. And that's 3 acres of hops. I don't know how many acres the plan was for orchard and flowers and all these other things. So there's a lot to manage there.
Correct. So I would, if anything, I love the vision. Mm-hmm. Absolutely love the vision. I believe it can work. I know where these people are located, and they're actually not too far away from where I live.
Yep.
And the region is perfect for it. I would say, however, that in the planning phases right now, they would have to look very hard at these three different attributes, you know, hops, cut flowers, and orchard, and figure out which one rolls first. Mm-hmm. Because they can't all roll at the same time. Having a, you know, I'm not a cut flower guy. I'm not sure what the infrastructure or the spend is for production there, but I can tell you from an orchard and hop standpoint, you got to be damn careful about which ones you roll out first and what your revenue cycle looks like. So from their aspect, I'm not really concerned so much about the technical, you know, like soil type and location and whatnot, because we can crush it with hops and orchard crops here in South Central Wisconsin. But how they plan to roll out these different business aspects can make or break them.
Interesting. That's a very interesting point. I will say there are a couple things in their notes here which do betray, in a good way, that they really are thinking carefully about some of the things that you and I have talked about somewhat recently that people tend to let go to the wayside. One of them is, one of the questions they have for us is about building design. They specifically ask about recommendations on buildings and what they'll need and all that kind of thing. And you and I have talked about that it's one of those things that you don't think about till all of a sudden you're kind of up Schitt's Creek and you need a place to do stuff.
Right.
The other thing...
And it depends. Mm-hmm. Well, so the building design, that depends on what are you going to do in it? Mm-hmm. I mean, are you going to do all of your orchard packing and cleaning? Are you just selling apples and pears and whatever, or are you pressing cider? Are you making apple pies? What are you doing? Do you need a room for cut flowers? Do you need refrigeration and wet storage for cut flowers? You know, so that's a saying, yeah, well, we understand we're going to do all these things, but then we need some sort of building. So what are we going to need?
And you're right. It depends. It comes back to the, it depends answer.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing they mention here, ultimately, we believe we're not limited by what we can grow, but by what we can sell. And again, we've talked about that on numerous occasions, that making sure you understand your market is so critically important, so that you're not growing, oh, I don't know, a whole bunch of Cascade that no one wants.
Well, that, to me, that rings like a church bell. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are spot on with that. Yeah. Clang. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why we didn't grow Yakima Gold, because we knew there was no market for it.
Yep. So to continue their point here, they say, so it's in top of mind for us that we need a sales and marketing plan in place. I will acknowledge many of the questions we've just asked are more related to growing, but since we don't plan to have a harvested crop for several years because of their timeline, they know that the growing, getting that stuff going right now is more important, but the sales and marketing plan needs to still be in place with a business model once we put shovel in the ground. It was the phrase he used. So, yeah, I mean, they're getting it. They're getting the full 360 of what needs to be looked at here. It's an ambitious plan, certainly. And I guess the only thing that I would say looks like a tripping point to me, to your point earlier, is the labor and the ownership and the ability to make sure that you're covered. This is not a set it and forget it operation.
No, not in any stretch of the imagination. And folks that are listening to this podcast, I don't know that I do a lot of work in the orchard world, the cider world, and especially ag in general, and looking at vetting out business plans and usually what these multi-specialty crop, small-scale farms, because they have the, on paper, they have the potential to throw off a ridiculous amount of revenue. But if it's too good to be true, it probably is. And that's where we have to have a really keen understanding of the real world costs and the risks associated with having a farm with three specialty crops that have no crop insurance. Oh, right. So one hailstorm at the wrong time of year can wreck my flowers, my hops, and my orchard crop. Yes. And they all had, three have different, you know, non-insurable agricultural product premiums. And I mean, there's those sorts of hidden aspects to this kind of integrated specialty cropping systems that a lot of people don't think about until it's too late. So again, the technical requirements are there, right? We know we can find that information. It's the business plan and operation plan and the sales and marketing plan aspects that are going to hopefully show you the potholes or pitfalls that are there and you can maneuver around them.
Mm-hmm. And so I did not clear this with you, James, before. I'm going to say it now, and you can clip it out of the episode if you don't like it. but given how close these folks are to you, as they go down this path, this would be a great opportunity for some kind of on-location scouting and showing what how a field turns into a hop yard over time.
That is true.
So stay in touch, please. You know who you are. Mm-hmm. And we'd love to continue to follow you along this journey that you're going on and see how it pans out.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Well, that's all that we have in terms of our listeners who wanted a little bit of advice / abuse, however you want to put it. I think we gave mostly advice and very little abuse.
So what do we have? What do we have in current news? Any current news? Any topics we want to chat about here in the last few minutes we've got?
Just more and more of those smoothie beers that I can't stand looking at. Well, the latest episode of The New Brewer came out. So if you're not part of the Brewers Association, and if you're not a brewer, you might not have a reason to. But the Brewers Association does do a lot of work for the brewing community. And even as a grower, they have a lot of great information about the industry in general. So the latest episode is all about ingredients. The latest issue of New Brewer, which just came out, is all about ingredients. And I know you were reading an article on terroir and on yeast strains. There was something on
bread of Mycetes. Ah. So bacteria for beer souring. Yes.
Ah, you're not a big sour fan though.
I love Brett. Brett is my favorite souring agent, but not a lot of people like it. Imagine that. that I would like the oddball, but it's also the one that I think that strain can most easily wreck your beer and your brew house forever. So maybe that's why I like it, because it's not easy to deal with. Just like me.
Just like you. That does describe you. We'll start calling you Brett.
Brett, yep. Hey, Brett.
The article I was reading was all about hop varieties over the last 5-10 years and how they've, you know, the top 10 have changed And as you can imagine, you know, Citra came out of nowhere and now it's up there. The thing that I found most interesting, and you got to be careful with some of this press. And when you do your market research and you figure out what the opportunities are, you know, we joke about the fact that Cascade's $2 a pound all the time. And it's not funny, especially for those of you with a lot of Cascade in the ground.
Right, right.
But if you look at what the Brewers Association is reporting, Cascade was the number one hop for years, and it dropped down to number two, and Centennial took its place in number one. And and seeing that may make you think, wow, people need Cascade. Here's the problem. The math they're using doesn't account for the volume of Cascade that's already out there. So, yes, everyone uses it. It's your bread and butter hop. The world doesn't need any more.
No, because there are still regional brewers that are working off contracts from 2016. Mm-hmm. So, yet, do you mean they're using hops that from 2016? They're probably from 2015. And they're packaged and they're still in cold storage. And yes, they're using them because they freaking bought them, because they overcontracted. Mm-hmm. The market is awash in Cascade right now.
And I remember it was years ago when you started seeing things about the Pacific Northwest just tearing it out of the fields.
Right. Yep.
So just
because at that point it's like, why I can't, you know, those growers, you know, when their lifespan of their vines are 7 to 8 years, they can't stand to weather a 5-year market surplus of any given variety.
It's not worth it.
No, it's not worth it. Mm-hmm.
So
that's really interesting.
Yeah, it's something to be, and it just betrays something to be careful of when you read the numbers and when you're doing your market plan. Yeah, Cascade's the second most popular hop that's out there. But in terms of demand versus supply, it has almost no market value.
Right.
So
very, very dangerous just to look at, yeah, every brewer uses Cascade. Yep, and every brewer uses Cascade because they can't afford to get rid of the stuff they already bought.
Mm-hmm. Now, relating...
That's why.
I will say, relating that back to the earlier part of this episode when we talked about our two friends who are doing this purely for the love of growing, Cascade is one of the more resilient varieties to grow. It's one of the more, I'd say, balanced hops in terms of being able to use it in a lot of things on your own. And there are a lot of worse ways you can go than just growing Cascade if it's for your own use and you're having fun and you're learning about hop production.
I would agree with that, yes.
We love our Cascade. Just don't expect to get rich on it.
I tell people to grow in a closet, and it will. It's ridiculous, and it will absolutely take you to school, but it will forgive you for it. So,
kind, you know, and you're kind of similar to that as well.
Ah. Well, except for the forgiveness part. You alluded to what I found earlier this past week in that fantastic scientific article looking at the impact of day length and night interruption. Mm-hmm. We talked about that earlier with Mark, and how photoperiod and night interruption impacts hop yield in the greenhouse in a hydroponic scenario. And it's very, very good actual hardcore data that supports the evidence that hops can be fooled and it to flower based on the exposure to light or darkness. And that's not something we ever disputed, but it was just basically we were basing our hypotheses on just general plant physiology and how those enzymes work related to the color of light that they get. And some folks out of Colorado State did a fantastic multi-year study, and they published an article in Nature, of all places, which is like, really? It's super legit if it's in Nature. And I read it four times over just to make sure I was understanding it. And I want to talk about that coming up because it's really impactful for our listeners who are in sort of the non-temperate zone where they're struggling with day length. So we'll get into that pretty deep.
Hmm. Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, that always has been an issue in terms of, we get that question so often. Well, I live here. Will hops grow? They'll grow anywhere. It's the, you know, what kind of yield you're going to get? What kind of allowances do you need to make? What can you do to account for that? But the day length piece, being able to control for that, that's one of those things we never thought was controllable before.
here's a caveat. Just like you were talking about people looking at market data and understanding about Cascades and the fact that it's the second most popular hop, the data that comes out of these scientific articles typically, in the vast majority of the cases, say nothing about commercial viability of the study. And that's something that I cannot stress enough. Just because Colorado State University found that, yeah, you can make a single hop plant flower four times a year under X, Y, and Z conditions, doesn't mean it's commercially viable. So that's really where we have to put our, we have to wear two hats. We got our academic mortarboard with our tassels on it. You take that off, you put on your hard hat and say, yeah, but is this a real world scenario? The devil's in the details there, and we have to tease that apart very carefully.
Yep, and I think that is what sets us apart from a pure scientific podcast, is that there's always a business bent to this. And we've talked about organic from that perspective and things that you can do, lots of different things. But when you start to counter it with the business side, should you do some of those things? And will they work if you're trying to turn this into a profitable enterprise?
And I've always been a big proponent of science, whether it's, you know, physical hard science or economic science, has to be answerable to the people. And if it's not, we have to question what we're getting out of it. Yeah, I love to see pure physics research at the Large Hadron Collider because it's just, wow, really? You discovered a new elementary particle? That's huge and could be foundational. But frankly, for the most of the dollars that we spend in doing scientific and economic science research, it has to be ultimately answerable to the people.
Sure. Clip it out of the episode if you don't like it.